there. This is Jessica from Atlanta, and I've actually got a question on behalf of one of my really good friends who is pregnant. And at her first ultrasound, she's about 9 weeks, and they said, it looks like from some angles, you have a bicornuate uterus.
What needs to be done for care of an uncircumcised baby?
An intact baby is the first thing that needs to be done.
Good
language.
Good change. Yep.
What questions do I ask when I'm interviewing a doula?
So my question, I don't believe I've ever heard it asked before, is about pacifiers.
It just feels like our bodies don't really need someone to manage the placenta every time. And I'm wondering, what is the best practice as far as management of the third stage with low-risk women in a home birth?
It actually helps the cervix open. So it's a good thing if it happens. If it doesn't happen, it's not a bad thing.
The throwing up helps it open, really?
Yeah.
Like the physiologic experience of throwing up.
Open mouth, open cervix.
I'm Cynthia Overgaard, owner of Hypnobirthing of Connecticut, childbirth advocate, and postpartum support specialist.
And I'm Tricia Ludwig, certified nurse midwife and international board-certified lactation consultant.
And this is the Down to Birth podcast.
Childbirth is something we're made to do, but how do we have our safest and most satisfying experience in today's medical culture?
Let's dispel the myths and get down to birth.
All right.
Yellow.
I'm no longer saying hi.
We don't say, you don't say hi. I don't say hi, do I? Should I say hi?
I don't know if you feel like it.
Do you think people get the joke? Do you think they know the joke? They would
I
have
don't
to
know.
Be diehard fans to really know the story.
They would have to have been with us from the beginning.
Or be, well, there are a lot of people binging. We hear that all the time. They're starting at, they just binge. But
that, we need to ask that question. We need to take a poll and see how many people who find our show start with episode one.
Oh, God, forgive us.
Don't.
And keep listening.
Go backwards. Start current and move backwards.
Go backwards until you just decide to stop. Yeah, it's so funny having a podcast and just memorializing all these episodes.
Thank goodness we moved to recording this way, though. Huh? Remember when we had to go to the studio and get the time and set all that up? That was
really nice, but editing was really hard, remember?
Oh, yeah, way harder.
Because we had one.
But we also got to have lunch after. That was great. Those were good days.
Definitely nice. I thought that was very nice, but this is easy. This makes life quite easy.
It does.
All right. Our friends, you had a good idea to pose a question on Instagram now that we're in February and to ask everyone how they're doing on their New Year's resolutions.
Oh, dear.
Right? And I didn't look at these.
Not fair.
I just posted this like an hour and a half ago. So we only got, I don't know, 20 responses or so. So I'll let me read some of these.
Well, first, before you begin, what's yours? And are you still doing it?
I don't think I had one.
I didn't do one this year either. This is the first time.
I have heard arguments against having New Year's resolutions because it, and especially for a perfectionist, because, you know, if you don't follow through, it's like, there it goes. I created a lot of new, really good habits last year. I got really into weight training and I took up Tai Chi and I did that in the middle of the year. It's like, you don't have to. And I didn't
have to be January 1st.
I didn't have any pressure on myself. I just kept doing it. And I look back and think, well, that's when I made the biggest change. It was last summer. So I don't know. I don't know if it would serve me to do that. So I don't think I did.
I think because we were reading Atomic Habits, I wasn't really focused on a New Year's resolution because the changes that we're trying to implement through reading the book and some of the old habits we're trying to get rid of and new habits we're trying to start just seemed more important.
I mean, who needs to start a new habit when you're reading a book about habits?
Right.
Yeah. That's good enough. I can intellectualize this.
Exactly. That's why.
I will sit and talk about habits. That's what I'm doing. Okay. So let's see what this says. This one says, patience and kind words with my crazy dogs. Man, I can relate to that. Who have been driving me nuts postpartum. We hear this so much. Right? Women are home with their babies and the dogs have needs, turns out. They want attention and they need to go out, turns out. And sometimes they make noise when we really want them to be quiet. So patience and kind words. I like the kind words.
There is nothing worse than your dog barking when your baby just went down for a nap.
Yeah. Be everyone, be gentle with your animals. they really don't mean to drive us crazy.
Oh, they just can't help it. Not at all.
No.
They're not thinking like that.
Kind words. I like that.
That's just a good one to live by.
Okay. Next one. To make my bed every day. I started 1 week late because we were all sick, but I'm going strong.
Awesome. That's a great one. I love things that are really concise and simple like that. Like let's not make it too general, because then it's too hard to follow through with, like, be a better person.
Yeah.
What does that mean?
That's such a good example,
right?
Be a better person.
Okay, keep going.
All right. And to have a successful VBAC. Does that qualify as a New Year's resolution? I guess it does. Next.
Yes.
Okay. This one says to not have any New Year's resolution and to focus on resting while nature rests too.
Love it.
Go for that one. Quit drinking. Still going strong.
Great.
This one says focused deep breathing daily. Yes. Has helped me navigate emotions in my first pregnancy.
Excellent one.
Good for her. To push through when I feel like quitting something. And yes, I'm still doing it. It's a little vague.
Yeah. But
it's a good,
it's not,
you're aware of it. It works.
Exactly. And it's not too broad. It's like, you know, when you need to push through, when you want to stop something, you get that urge to quit. Nope, not going to do it.
Right. Mine is to minimize plastic. I've been using my glass, wood, metal items, and so far, so good. Cold plunge every day in January and still going strong. Wow. And she then sent us an amazing photo of the cold water she's plunging into. See?
Dedication.
Isn't that awesome?
Yes, that's great. Wait, she's doing that outside?
Oh, yeah, that's my son did it. He did it with Zeus family. Yeah, they go every January 1st.
Well, a lot of people just have cold plunge pools at their house or like some sort of...
Oh, no. Here,
set up in their home so they don't have to go to a lake.
No, here everyone goes to the beach. So two right. family friends of ours, the whole family's kids, and Alex joined them. In fact, when they invited Alex to go on New Year's Eve and they were all hanging out with us, they were like, hey, we're doing the cold plunge in the morning like we do every year. Alex, do you want to go? And then my son said no. And he said, which probably means I should go. So he did. And then a week later, they all did it again. So we have a video and it's adorable. They're all running in. They have to dunk their heads. Really awesome. All right. This one says no booze all year. And honestly, I have way more patience. To strengthen my marriage, AKA kick our in-laws to the side and putting us first.
Good. Now narrow that down. Name three ways you're going to put your marriage first.
How will you kick them? How far will you kick them?
How are you? With what foot, right or left?
I didn't make one. My goal is just to be able to shower and get ready for work before the baby wakes. That's a great one.
That is. You did make one.
I remember when my kids were 8 and 4, I took a little local parenting class. It was kind of nice. It was through the school system. It was really fun. And they said like something about your morning routine. And I decided then when my kids were 8 and 4, that I wanted to be showered before doing the morning routine and getting Alex on the bus. And I did that. I started getting up early enough to shower first because it was always harder to shower after I got them on the bus for some reason. And I always do that now. I just make sure I do that immediately before.
You get out of bed and you go straight to the shower?
Yeah. Don't most people? My husband does too.
No.
When do you shower?
My least favorite thing to do.
But that's how I start my day. I shower. I brush my teeth.
And you go straight to your shower.
I get out of bed. A minute later, I'm brushing my teeth. 3 minutes later, I'm in the shower.
Wow.
10 minutes later, I'm out of the shower and I'm dressed. I'm getting dressed. Yeah. Well, how else do you decide to shower? Like when do you do it at night or it's just like a random time of day? I guess I'll have a shower now.
It's usually before I need to leave the house or before I need to show up for work or after my workout.
No.
It is almost never first thing in the morning.
All right. There's one more.
I was going to say one more thing about that. Specifically to this woman or anyone else out there who has a new baby, if it makes them feel any better. I distinctly remember after Lola was born, it was not until the 6 week mark that I had showered, had breakfast, and been dressed before noon. And I remember that day so well. And I was like, oh my God, I've done it all. I'm dressed, I'm out of the house, I'm showered, and I've eaten, and it's before noon.
Well,
6 weeks.
Hey, Cynthia and Tricia. I just had a question about management of the placenta. And most of what I've seen in birth work is that everyone whom I've seen uses controlled cord traction after the separation gush. And after listening to Barbara Harper, I'm wondering if doing this for every single mom every single time is really necessary. I have asked, and they've said that it's because there could, quote, be a concealed bleed behind the placenta. And I do understand the dangers of a postpartum hemorrhage and a concealed bleed, but it just feels like our bodies don't really need someone to manage the placenta every time. And I'm wondering, what do you all do in practice? What is the best practice as far as management of the third stage with low-risk women in a home birth setting? Because I'm thinking it's maybe a physiologic thing that could happen. So thanks.
So is it possible it's a physiologic thing that could happen? Or all the other mammals lying out there with their placenta still inside them?
Right, having their fellow mammal pull on the cord to get it out.
Can somebody not get this?
Right.
Give a little tug.
Grab it with your teeth. Pull it out. Okay. The placenta can certainly be born without cord traction. Cord traction came into the process of active management. It was a three-step process. This is how I was taught as a midwife to birth placentas or deliver placentas, with the use of Pitocin, controlled cord traction, and fundal massage.
Well, and you don't support that. You're saying that's how you were trained, but you're not so impressed by that, right?
No, I'm not. A placenta will come out on its own, especially if you get a woman upright. I mean, I think because most women in the hospital are giving birth on their back, cord traction became a thing because there's actually a curve in the pelvis. So the placenta is sitting below that curve. So it actually has to go against gravity.
Just like the baby has to, Tricia.
Yeah, exactly. Same curve. Mm. Same curve. They both go through the same canal.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you don't use cord traction or you don't get them upright, how's the placenta coming out if it's got to go uphill?
Right. There's no fetal ejection reflex for the placenta, right?
Not unless you're upright. No, there isn't.
It doesn't come flying out horizontally. No.
Right. Okay. So if you're having trouble getting the placenta, if the placenta is not just coming, and oftentimes it detaches and then it's literally sitting in the back of the vagina.
Mm.
So, you know, you can give it a little pull to get it out, or you can get a woman upright. But the risk of cord traction is that we pull too vigorously and pull the placenta off the uterine wall before it's ready. And that can increase the risk of a postpartum bleed.
Mm-hmm. I don't know what it is about cord traction, that like tugging on the cord. I find it, I can't get away from this one first notion. It just feels so disrespectful to me. I don't like, that's the first vibe. It's like, are you really handling someone's body like this? You're tugging on something that's attached to the inside of their body. Can we not?
You can actually invert the uterus if you pull too hard. You can literally pull
the
uterus. Yes, you can.
That's terrifying. That can be inverted and like pulled out.
I mean, it has happened.
You mean partially inverted?
Yes.
Or do you mean like flipped inside out? Like a sock.
I mean, that's
or like
not,
a hat.
That's unlikely to happen, but it has happened.
That's terrifying. No,
you have to pull pretty hard.
Isn't? But that sounds like a calamity. Is it not a calamity?
No, that's a total calamity. Yes.
Hey there, all you amazing, strong, and beautiful women, especially you new moms and moms-to-be. I'm Taylor, co-founder and CEO of Vitality.
And I'm Taylor's sister, Chloe, co-founder and chief design officer. We started Vitality to encourage and empower everyone to live a vibrant life. We're all about supporting women, especially on the journey to motherhood.
When I was pregnant, I really struggled to find comfy leggings that I could wear all day, every day. So we set out to make the best maternity pants out there. We took those pain points and designed pieces that were supportive and comfortable, including details like a high-rise fit, underbelly seam, raw-cut hems, and to top it off, we have an embedded silicone panel that acts like a built-in suspension system for your low back, which is the first of its kind.
So we designed this line in our Marshmallow Soft Cloud 2 fabric in not only a maternity pant, but a volley and biker short as well.
Let me tell you, all of these pieces are a game changer.
Just go to shopvitality.com.
And cherry on top, you guys can use code DOWNTOBIRTH at checkout to get 10% off your order.
10% off athleisure, designed for pregnancy, during pregnancy.
Down to Birth is sponsored by Postpartum Soothe. Recovering from a vaginal birth takes many women by surprise. Everyday activities like sitting, walking, and going to the bathroom can be uncomfortable. And Postpartum Soothe is just the remedy to support your healing and relieve discomfort. Postpartum Soothe is a 100% organic herbal blend that's applied to maternity pads in the days immediately following your birth, giving you all the benefits of a sitz bath 24/7. That's because herbs like comfrey leaf, uva ursi, and witch hazel are known for their antimicrobial and anti-inflammatory properties. Postpartum Soothe can be prepared anytime during the third trimester, and it makes a beautiful baby gift. It's a must for any woman seeking a faster, easier recovery from a vaginal birth. Visit postpartumsoothe.com. That's postpartumsoothe, SOOTHE.com, and use promo code DOWNTOBIRTH.
Did you know that 97% of women take a prenatal vitamin, yet 95% of us are still deficient in key nutrients for pregnancy and postpartum? After a long time searching for the optimal prenatal nutrition product, we bring you Needed, a radically better prenatal vitamin. Needed's nutritional products offer nutrients that your body can utilize with doses at optimal versus bare minimum levels and are available in capsules and an easy-to-take vanilla powder, perfect for those moms with pill fatigue or nausea. Needed is a woman-founded company offering a superior nutritional product lineup backed by research, data, and insights from nearly 4,000 women's health experts. Needed offers premium supplements for every stage, from egg quality support for women trying to conceive to lactation support for breastfeeding. And you know, Cynthia and I, we love their botanical sleep and relaxation support packets before bedtime. So if you are looking for a radically different prenatal, head on over to thisisneeded.com and enter Down to Birth for 20% off your first order.
I'm speechless. Congratulations.
That was my goal tonight.
That'll make for a great episode. So I dare you to do this episode without me. I dare you.
I dare you to try.
All right. Is there anything else on that?
Yes. So the second half of the question was, you know, what do you do? What do you think is best practice? I think the best practice is to leave things alone. Usually when the placenta separates, you'll see a separation gush. So you see a little bit of blood, and that's how you know that the placenta has separated. And then you might just ask her to get upright and see if the placenta, if she feels it, and have her push and bear down and birth the placenta. Sometimes if you need to just check a little, you can give it a teeny little tug just to see if it still seems like it's attached, but that's not cord traction. So leave it alone.
When I got out of the tub at the birth you attended, my daughter's birth, it just slipped out. Mm-hmm. I totally felt like it wasn't it going. And she grabbed a bowl and it just slipped out when I took my step out of the tub. So
it was sitting in the back of your vagina.
Yeah.
It can. And then when you sit up, it.
And it, I didn't have to bear down. I didn't have to do anything. So it also can be very easy, turns out.
Yeah. I think most women feel an urge to push when it's sitting there. They'll feel that.
I never did either birth. Did you ever feel an urge to push?
Yeah, okay. I did.
Oh, wow. Mm-hmm. I had no idea that that could
not
happen.
Not quite like a baby, though. It's not as powerful of an urge.
That's because the placenta doesn't have a head.
That's right. It's soft. That's what about midwives always say. Don't worry. There's no bones in this one.
Oh, right.
Every midwife's favorite line.
Good morning, ladies. I love you guys. I've listened to every single episode I'm expecting this month. So excited. So my question, I don't believe I've ever heard it asked before, is about pacifiers. I see that there is conflicting evidence saying that it soothes babies. So I'm wondering if you guys have any opinions based on giving babies pacifiers, if they work, if I should give it in the first place, if it creates a dependency. I also wonder if it does contribute to mouth development in general. So I'm just wondering if I should even introduce a pacifier in the first place. So I really appreciate you guys. I hope that you can answer my question. Thank you.
We received two questions this month from women asking the same thing.
Did your babies?
Excuse me?
Did your babies ever use pacifiers?
No, I never used a pacifier with my children.
You never tried?
I never tried.
Yeah. Most breastfeeding babies won't take them.
Ah.
Some will, but a baby who's breastfeeding well usually has all their sucking needs met through breastfeeding, and they often won't take a pacifier. None of mine would take one. Well, yeah, it's okay if they do, but I definitely discourage pacifier use when establishing breastfeeding. So in the first few weeks, you don't want to introduce pacifier because it actually is any sucking opportunity you want your baby to be at your breast when you're building your milk supply. After breastfeeding is well established and there are no breastfeeding issues, if you want to try to introduce a pacifier for limited selective use, fine, but most of them won't take it. And you have to use it judiciously because it can interfere with milk supply if you're constantly going to the pacifier instead of putting them to the breast. So things like car rides when the baby can't be breastfeeding or a diaper change or just very temporary use to get them calmed down before you put them to the breast. But I just recommend using your finger in that case because you're not going to leave your finger in their mouth for an hour, but you might with a pacifier.
She also asked if it can cause any mouth issues.
Well, sometimes pacifiers are actually a good pacifier for breastfeeding is used for suck training exercises. So if a baby has a weak or discoordinated suck, you might use a pacifier or a finger also to help them train their muscles. But of course, there's always the concern about orthodontic issues with babies who suck on their fingers, suck on their thumbs, suck on pacifiers. Yes, that can happen. I still think personally, if a baby chooses to suck on their thumb or finger, that's better than a pacifier because they can self-soothe. You don't have to find the pacifier in the middle of the night when they wake up. I mean, haven't you heard the stories of moms who put like 6 pacifiers in the crib at night? So if the baby wakes up,
no, is that right?
Oh yeah. You know, because they don't want to have to get up and put the pacifier back in the baby's mouth.
I did ask my mom, who is a retired speech and language pathologist, if she heard about pacifiers leading to any speech or developmental delays of any kind related to the mouth function and the mouth development. And she said she's never heard of it. She did do research on how bottle nipples could greatly impact mouth development and cause speech impediments in young children. But she finished her master's in 1970. And apparently back then, the nipples that were on bottles just had basically a sufficiently wide hole and babies had to jut their tongue forward. They didn't work at drawing the milk out. They had to stop it with their
tongue.
Because
the flow was so fast.
Yes. And then they would push out their front teeth and it would really change that. Like the mouth requires the sucking one way or another to develop appropriately. And that wasn't good. And this woman also asked if there can be a dependency. And sure, I'm sure we've both seen that.
Oh yeah.
100%. I don't know how parents create that dependency or get away from it. But that is definitely something I would be thinking about if I were using pacifiers. I've seen 3.5-year-olds walking around with.
Completely. I've heard plenty of stories of families who, you know, have had to put the pacifiers in an envelope and show the child that the pacifier is being mailed away, never to return. And they have to go through all these creative ways of like getting rid of the pacifier forever and helping the child adjust to that.
Burn the pacifier ritual and traumatize the child completely.
But the flip side of that, people say like, well, if they suck on their thumb or their fingers, you know, you can't ever take it away. And how do you ever get them to stop? And people paint the fingernails with this horrible tasting stuff so they don't suck on their fingers.
My children never sucked their thumbs. So I felt like that was an easy path. Though they wanted to breastfeed constantly. So maybe it wasn't that easy. I was a little jealous at times of those who used pacifiers. I had little moments of like, oh, my life would be so easy right now.
So did I. And I tried
baby
actually,
in the car. Yeah.
I tried to give all of my kids a pacifier once. Yeah. This is when they were months old, you know, 5 months, 6 months old, something like that, probably. Mm-hmm. None of them would take it.
Hi, ladies. I just have a question for you about doulas. I am expecting my second baby next year. And I had a home birth with my first with an amazing midwife. And this time around, I really think I would like to hire a doula. I really just need someone to kind of keep me emotionally, mentally supported and strong, and hopefully just kind of keep me in the zone. My midwife was amazing, but she definitely was not there to hold my hand. She was there to attend the birth. So I'm looking for someone who can really just kind of help just be another woman, support me in that time. My only question is, what questions do I ask when I'm interviewing a doula? I pretty much know all the questions I'd like to ask my next home birth midwife, but I really don't know what questions I should ask for a doula and to kind of figure out if she and I would be the best compatible fit together. If you give any insight or advice, I would greatly appreciate it.
I think the first thing is just make sure you spend some time with her, meet her, talk to her, and just start to see if you have a feeling like, I would love this person with me in my labor. I think that tells, just you go with your gut instinct. If you feel like you just feel safe and good and uplifted around her, that's great. You could ask her questions like, you could tell her what you're looking for. I want someone to keep me really calm and grounded. You could say, what are some of your favorite techniques that you use for women in labor to get them physically comfortable? And then say, can you tell me some examples of what you've done when women had moments where they maybe felt like giving up? Or where they were discouraged? How do you typically handle that? And how does, you know, what do you find happens for women and what calms them? And see if she's versed in that and she's experienced in that. Those are the things I'm thinking of, but mainly just go with your gut. You just should feel really good around her.
I think that as long as you do a little background checking, make sure that they have good references, what their experience is, if you have a good vibe, a good energy with them, somebody you'd want to hang out with, somebody you'd want to have lunch with, then it's probably a good fit. The only other thing I would want to know is, you know, do they do anything postpartum? Is that included in their fees? Is that separate? And at what point in the labor they typically want to come and be with you?
That's so important. The postpartum was so important. I don't even recommend doulas who don't have a postpartum visit in their contract. I won't even recommend them. I just thought of one more. Also ask the doula if she has any other credentials. Some doulas specialize in other things. Do they do placenta encapsulation? Do they have a background in massage or in reflexology? Reiki?
Spinning babies.
Have they learned spinning babies, Rebozo technique? There are so many great skills doulas can have. So find out if she does, because they might not mean much to you now, but they can be really invaluable to you in labor. They really turn out to be assets.
And women often ask us the question of, you know, if I'm having a home birth or I have a midwife, do I really need a doula? And we generally say yes. We think that that is a helpful addition, even if you're having a home birth, because they definitely have different roles. Finding the perfect pregnancy and breastfeeding bra is no easy task. Your search is now over. Meet Davin and Adley, a mother-owned pumping, nursing, and maternity bra company with a unique, comfortable, and stylish cropped cami. This item is perfect to wear all day long from day one of your pregnancy right through the end of your breastfeeding journey and probably beyond. The Amelia cami makes pumping and breastfeeding easy while looking and feeling good on your body. It works seamlessly for both wearable pumps and flange pumps, and you can breastfeed in it. It also has a beautiful stretch lace back. You can sleep in it, dress up in it, go out in it, whatever you want to do in it. And trust us, the quality in this item and all of their items are top notch. They're soft, durable, and attractive. These bras will truly go the distance. Davin and Adley carry a gorgeous selection of maternity and nursing wear, and they have an innovative one-piece breast pad that we've never seen anywhere else. So no more losing those solo breast pads, ladies. Go ahead and check out the full collection of maternity and nursing items at davinandadley.com and use your promo code DOWNTOBIRTH to save 15%. All right, breastfeeding moms, do you want to know one of our all-time favorite items for your nursing journey? If you know us, you probably could guess it. Yep, it's the Silverette Nursing Cup. These little nipple heroes not only protect, but also heal because they're made of real silver. It is naturally antimicrobial, antifungal, and anti-inflammatory. These little cups will be your best friend in the early sensitive weeks of breastfeeding your baby. And our favorite part is they last literally forever. You can pass them on just like you would a favorite piece of jewelry.
Head on over to silverettesusa.com and use promo code DOWNTOBIRTH to save 15%.
Hi, Cynthia and Tricia. My name is Amanda, and I have a question regarding throwing up while in labor. I've had two babies, one in October of 2021, and my second daughter was born in August of this year in 2023. During both of my labors, as soon as my water broke, I immediately threw up. The first time caught me by surprise, and so I threw up all over the bathroom floor. However, the second time I was prepared and I had a trash can near me. After I had my second daughter, I asked my midwife why I threw up both times after my water breaking. My midwife said it had to do with the hormones changing while in labor. And then a friend of mine said she read somewhere that roughly 1 in 5 women throw up while in labor. I know in some previous Q&A podcasts, there have been women who have stated that they felt nauseous throughout labor, but my experience was just throwing up as soon as the water broke. So I'm just curious what triggers this. So yeah, I'd love to hear what you know about that. And thank you so much for all that you ladies do. I absolutely love your podcast and I recommend it to all of my friends who are expecting little ones.
Well,
I think throwing up in labor is pretty normal. I'm surprised that she said 1 in 5. I think in my experience, it's more than that anecdotally.
I did ask a doula who's attended hundreds of births because I was so surprised to hear how common it is because it never happened to me and I never really knew about it that much. And she said like 40% of the time. She said more.
Yeah, that's more what I would think, like a third to half of women probably throw up in labor.
I can't
typically in transition though.
Right. Which this is not what this woman said. Water breaking is most commonly occurring at transition.
Yeah. So we have no idea when her water broke. I mean, if she threw up with her water breaking before labor even started, that would be unusual.
Right.
But yes, it is related to the massive shift in hormones that happens, adrenaline increasing in the body, and it actually helps the cervix open. So it's a good thing if it happens. If it doesn't happen, it's not a bad thing.
The throwing up helps it open, really?
Yeah.
Like the physiologic experience of throwing up.
Open mouth, open cervix.
Okay. Open mouth, open cervix.
And it's just this really overpowering opening of everything. And also the body getting rid of everything. It's the same reason that we, similar to why women usually have bowel movements in the beginning of labor. It's like clearing the system of everything. We just got to focus on a baby. We don't want anything in the bowels. We don't want anything in the stomach.
Mm-hmm. So totally normal, even productive.
Totally productive.
No big deal if it happens. No big deal if it doesn't happen.
Doesn't mean anything's wrong if it doesn't happen. Great. Okay. So that's a wrap on the regular version of today's Q&A episode. We will be moving on now to the extended version, which is available on Apple Podcasts. What do we call it?
It is called Apple Podcasts. Oh, the Apple subscription.
Apple subscription.
Which is, yeah. And ours is under $30 for a year. And every single episode is 100% ad-free. So it's a very nice
ad-free
flip of a switch you get with no ads ever and always extended episodes. And it automatically becomes the episode in your feed. You don't have to do anything to access it. Those are the episodes that upload once you subscribe. Very cool.
That's right. And
we're subscribers.
It's very nice.
We are.
Yes, we are. And if you would like more, you can get the extended version over on Patreon, plus ad-free episodes, plus our book club, plus our incredible library of
master
live
class
streams,
workshops. Yep.
Yes, there's so much good content over there.
And the extended episodes on Patreon are available to any tier, no matter what tier women are in. So come hang out with us over there. All right. On to quickies.
All right. Are non-stress tests ever necessary or will they just stress me out? I think that they can be helpful. Yes. I think they can also be stressful when they are used routinely. But if there's a concern about the baby, then a non-stress test can provide useful information.
Like what? What kind of concern? Like, because women are getting these
decreased fetal movement.
Like if the woman suspects decreased fetal movement, but what we're seeing is like she's gone well past her due date. They're suspecting a big baby, her age. None of these are typically.
Well, they're done routinely. They're done routinely in late pregnancy. So routine use is going to be more stressful. But is there an indication in a time when a non-stress test can be helpful? Yes, there is.
Would you decline them routinely?
Yes. Yeah. I never had one.
Me same.
But yeah, I mean, I was having home births. We don't do them.
Okay, next. Chop, chop.
Do I need a hep block just in case? Ooh. I have a history of postpartum hemorrhage.
No. I mean,
look,
even
about, look how quick we are.
Yeah, that was quick. Should we stop there before I talk?
Yes. You don't need one.
Okay, fine. We'll stop there.
Let me tell you, if you need an IV, people can get it in you pretty fast.
Right.
What needs to be done for care of an uncircumcised baby?
An intact baby is the first thing that needs to be done.
Good
language.
Good change. Yep. Nothing.
I mean, the care has to be when you intervene. The care is more around when you do circumcise.
No, I think a lot of people worry that with an intact child, you have to clean the foreskin, pull it back, retract it, all that stuff.
Heck no.
I never did any of that.
No, you're not supposed to do any of that. No. It's attached. You're not supposed to bother it. It will naturally retract. When it's attached, it's not going to get dirty and it's going to keep itself clean. And, you know, over time, over years, it will retract. And then you will be teaching your son in time how to clean himself when it fully retracts. And, you know, they used to say soap and now they're saying water. You really just want to be minimalist, but he'll have to worry about cleansing himself through his life, which is appropriate. Don't bother it.
Leave it alone. I've never done a thing. Does a heart-shaped uterus, look, here it comes again. Does a heart-shaped uterus automatically mean a C-section? No.
Oh. Well, so the women who didn't have the extended version didn't hear the long answer to this.
Oh, that's right. In the extended version, we went into a discussion about the heart-shaped uterus. So if you're curious, what's one piece of advice for a mom who would like, what's one piece of advice for a mom who wants to attempt a VBAC? Ooh, I got one.
Well, the first one is don't say attempt.
Exactly.
You had the same thought.
Say.
Okay. Don't use the word, don't use the acronym TOLAC, trial of labor. You can try. It's like your body.
You will have a vaginal birth.
Yeah. You're planning or you're having a vaginal birth, period. That's it.
The second piece of advice would be to not go to the provider that did the C-section.
And the third piece of advice is avoid induction.
Look at us. We can't just give one piece of advice.
No, we have to do our best.
How much blood loss is considered postpartum hemorrhage? Generally 500. Severe is 1,000. But I think there's a movement to kind of move away from measuring blood loss and more symptomatic. It's very hard to measure blood loss after birth because there's so much stuff in with the blood, other fluids.
So what are some of the symptoms?
Oh, severe drop in blood pressure, lightheadedness.
Okay.
Low blood pressure symptoms.
Okay.
Is the milkshake boob massage before breastfeeding actually helpful? It is really helpful, actually. I have seen pretty impressive results for various things with using the breast milkshake. I recommend it a lot.
That thing should have gone viral, that thing you did.
Yeah, maybe I'll have to do it again.
That's the kind of thing that should go viral. It's a good video.
I'm sure if I did a topless, it would.
If you do a topless milkshake demonstration, it's going viral.
We might get kicked off Instagram.
We would get kicked off, but it would be worth it.
Okay. One of these days.
We're going to go down in style.
I mean, come on. No shame in the breast. Like, why not?
I mean, shaking at Trisha is another story. So,
well, this is what I teach women to do. I shake their breasts all the time.
Okay. Our lives are very different. I've never shaken a woman's breast.
I have shaken many. All right. What's your favorite holiday?
Oh, I used to tell myself 4th of July or Thanksgiving, but on it, it's just Christmas. Everyone's just so, it's just Christmas.
How can it not be Christmas?
How can it not be? I think the question should be, what's your favorite other than Christmas?
Because, right. Excluding Christmas, what's your favorite holiday?
I mean, when I was a young woman, 4th of July always seemed somehow romantic to me. You know, like, you know, you're out on a date with your boyfriend and it's a hot summer night and you're wearing like a cute, beautiful dress and there are fireworks. And that was always I've got a lot of really, really sweet 4th of July memories in my life. But then Thanksgiving felt special to me just because you can't relate.
I grew up in Canada on 4th of July. We didn't celebrate.
You just have a lot of bugs.
Yeah, but we weren't celebrating 4th of July.
Right, because you would have to do the fireworks yourselves.
Well, and you're in Canada. You're not celebrating the American Independence Day.
Oh, yeah, that's true. That's true. I didn't even think about the obvious. And then Thanksgiving also, because it's just kind of intimate. It's easy. And it's all around gratitude, which is very beautiful. And
I love Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
Thanksgiving feels like Christmas, but without the stress of presents.
Or Ruby crying.
Or Ruby, we didn't disclose that last time.
We did, didn't we?
No, I said. You said I can guess which child.
Oh, okay.
I never disclosed it. It's fine. She'll laugh. She'd laugh about it now.
Good. She's not listening to the podcast anyway. Come on.
No, of course not.
Our kids.
Someday she might. Someday she probably will.
She'll binge it.
Last one. If you could take one book to a deserted island, what would it be?
A Soldier of the Great War by Mark Halpern.
Okay. Mine would be How to Survive on a Desert Island.
Deserted
you're so island. Smart. A deserted desert island.
So smart. Like a fool, no. I picked fiction.
I mean, it's got to be a book that's going to help you in some way, right? Not just entertain you.
About it. I didn't think the question was literal.
Or
how to build a canoe.
Or it should be a book that you're willing to read like 100 times.
Well, that's what I picked.
You read that 100 times.
Well, if above any other book, 100 times, yes.
I was thinking more like some sort of like A Course in Miracles or the Bible or something that requires a lot of deep thought that you could read over and over and learn from each time.
Yeah, I picked that book. That's the one I would tire of. I did just reread Love in the Time of Cholera, which is just extraordinary. That was delightful. Like, it's got so much humor in it and it's so beautifully written. That's another definitely top three in my top three now. Yeah.
I have not read that. I should read it.
Oh, you should read that book. It is so incredible. I mean, I was chuckling within a few pages in. There's so much humor in that book, but honestly, the writing is just unbelievable. It's unbelievable writing. Mm. Anyway, is that it?
That is it.
Ooh. And that means we're heading into March.
And spring is around the corner.
Oh, anyone in the Northeast is just...
Days are getting longer. Yeah. Birds are coming out.
Daylight savings in a couple of weeks.
Oh, can't wait.
I know. That's the best part.
The dark days of winter are behind us.
All right. Anything else to say before we sign off?
The last thing I want to say is I would just like to read a recent podcast review. I don't think people realize how much the reviews help the podcast. So if anybody has had a thought to give a review, please just go and do it. Even if you don't want to write anything, that's okay. Just tap the 5 stars. I'm currently 23 weeks pregnant, and thankfully, your podcast has empowered me and taught me to advocate for myself. I had to fire my OB after she told me that she will induce me at 38 weeks due to me being 41 years old, and she never asked what my birth plan was. So after my plans for a midwife transfer fell through, I let her know I originally wanted a home birth, and she stated, well, your baby will most likely die if you do a home birth. I was appalled and so happy I had facts to back up all my choices to my planned natural home birth, mainly due to this podcast and the extra research I've done. I fired her and was able to get help to fund my home birth with my midwife team, who makes me feel safe and heard. Thank you, ladies, so much.
How nice.
Thank you for that review.
And sharing episodes is really the best thing, or mentioning us on social media is such a wonderful, quick way to give back if giving is your vibe. Episode shares are our love language.
That's right.
We all know how I feel about love languages.
Well, in this case, we support them.
In this case, we do.
Thanks for joining us at the Down to Birth Show. You can reach us at Down to Birth Show on Instagram or email us at contact@downtobirthshow.com. All of Cynthia's classes and Trisha's breastfeeding services are held live, online, serving women and couples everywhere.
Please remember, this information is made available to you for educational and informational purposes only. It is in no way a substitute for medical advice. For our full disclaimer, visit downtobirthshow.com/disclaimer. Thanks for tuning in. And as always, hear everyone and listen to yourself.
Like a point 0.2% of women's uteruses, uteri.
Is that a word? That's not the word, is it?
I think it is actually.
Really?
Let's make sure.
It sounds like a Latin word. Yeah, it does sound like a Latin word.
I do believe it is uteri.
Yeah, that's
fine. Let me make sure.
But no one can really say that.
Yes, it is. The organ in the lower body of a woman.
Won't even say octopi. They're just going to go with octopuses. Most people just don't even go with octopi. They say alumni instead of alumni, like for the plural.
Alumni.
Octopus, octopi. But I really haven't heard anyone say octopi. I really hear people just say, I'm going with it. I know it's wrong.
I just avoid the plural of octopus because I do not like the word octopuses.
Okay. So on this note, everyone knows I love languages. The Italian pastas, they end in an I because the I is plural in Italian. So like, you know, you could say like one spaghetto. People, I say like, I'll have one ravioli. And I'm like, that's plural. Because it would sound hilarious to say, I'll have a raviolo.
True. Okay. Well, when we're talking about the uterus, it is the plural is uteri.
Wow.
So the incidence of a bicornate uteri.
No, of a bicornate uterus. Because we're talking about one.
I'm messing with you.